Hello, everybody, and welcome back to yet another episode of Gameable Audio, a video game music podcast where we discuss and talk around the music and the composers behind the music. I am your host, Kristoffer Schenström, and this is episode 19, where we're going to talk about platformers. There's a lot of different type and varieties of different platformers, but for this week, I've selected yet another four tracks, and the main reason for the different tracks and games that I've chosen this week is, first of all, games that I have played, because it's so much easier to talk about the games a little bit more when I'm discussing and going through. But also, I'm going in to kind of handpick a little bit about the different controls, or more like platforms in this sense. So I picked a little bit from the PC, the Sega, Super Nintendo, and arcade. I love and adore all these games. I haven't finished a single one of them, though, now that I think of it. But yeah, that's not the important part. We're going to listen to the music this week, and we're going to talk a little bit more and understand a little bit more about the composers. With that said, let's jump straight into the first game of the week. Just as an extra note, now that I think of it, it's only 2D platformers that I picked for today. These are the ones that I find more favorable, because I find it really hard to have a full control of characters in 3D. Don't know why, but that's kind of how I kind of like it. But yeah, the first track of the week that we're going to listen to, just because I'm more leaning towards PC, we're going to listen to Aliens Ate My Babysitter from the game Commander Keen in Aliens Ate My Babysitter. There we're fading it out. The first track of the week. This was from the game Commander Keen in Aliens Ate My Babysitter. And the first track here is also named just like the game, Aliens Ate My Babysitter. And this little beauty and the full track, or the original soundtrack here that we have, was composed by the American Bobby Prince. The game was developed by the American company. You might have heard of them. I don't know for sure, but you might have heard of them, id Software. The game was released only for DOS in 1991. The game here, it is the seventh game in the series, but usually when people talk about it, and sometimes as it is shown as Commander Keen 6 Aliens 8 My Babysitter. But yeah, when it comes to the games, Commander Keen in Keen Dreams was actually kind of released, either was about the same time or it was a little bit prior to it. So, but yeah, that game is specifically not a numbered game within the series, so when it comes to the Commander Keen in Keen Dreams. When it comes to Commander Keen in Aliens Ate My Babysitter, this is actually one of the three games in the trilogy. They released the second trilogy in the series, so it is in the main series in that sense. But when it comes to the game itself, and let's start out actually with the track that we just listened to. I really like how laid back the track is. It's nice, it's neat, but it also kind of gives a good vibe of what the game series is. The game series has always had this kind of more laid-back tracks. It's really mellow, in my opinion, but still kind of funky at the same time. So it gives of I would say, a weird vibe, but in a good sense. So when it comes to this specific track, what I liked about it and why I decided to go with this one, first of all, this is a game in the series that comes a little bit later. And also, depending on how we look at it, but since we've been exploring Commander Keen for such a time here with the sixth game, or even the seventh in the series already, we're starting to see a little bit more of a, like a musical kind of persona for Commander Keen. Commander Keen is this, like, what is it, like 8 years old little boy who's traveling around in space and doing things with his pogo stick and his little ray gun blaster. And I don't know why that kind of drew me into this game, but I really liked Commander Keen back in the day. It's like the looks of it, it doesn't really look great, but looking at when this was released in 1991, graphics weren't that great either, but still there were new mechanics in this with rotating or like they used motions for tiles within this game, which was kind of new and great at this time period. And for me, I don't think I played in 1991. I was still very young, most likely not. I guess I played the Commander Keen games in like 95 to 96 at least. But I would say 96, 97 to be more precise for when I got in connection with Commander Keen. And for me, it was just Aliens Ate My Babysitter was not the first game in the Commander Keen series that I played. I actually started out with the fourth game in the series. So I kind of started with the correct trilogy of when this game was released together with the fourth game, fifth game, and the sixth game. No, but it's really, really nice. But in this game, you're basically walking around. You have this overworld that you can walk around a little bit freely, but of course, it's limited to where you need to go. Because as Commander Keen progresses throughout the world and completes more and more levels, you get access to certain things. So you need to kind of go back and forth. So it's like an adventure game, so to speak. And when you enter these levels, you have these really neat 2D platforming levels where you can jump through different holes and so on. You have your pogo stick so you can jump even higher and do really, really high jumps. Even though the jump itself is still kind of high comparing to other games of this, not genre or anything, but the jumps are really big for the, I would say, for this time period. I would say that Commander Keen has a little bit, the camera is a little bit closer to Commander Keen, so it's not as close as Sonic games, for example. So you can still see a little bit of the other levels and so on as you progress through it, but it does not give you the same zoom as a Mario game does. So considering how Mario can jump like seven times his own height, Commander Keen can still only jump like two, three times his height if he has the pogo stick, for example. No, but I really love and adore. The music is super nice, super sweet for this game, so I highly recommend people that enjoy this track to listen in a little bit more on Bobby Pryor's work for this game series, even though we're going to go into more details on other music that he has composed to. If people like this, maybe you'll like the other ones. So, looking at Price, he has been working on composing video game music for a really long time, and a lot of games that are related to id Software specifically, but of course not only. There are still a lot of other games that he has worked on. But starting out with video game music, he started out with Rescue Rover 2 that was released in 1991. This game was also re-released a little bit later as Dognapped! Exclamation mark. And that re-release was released in 1993. I don't really know why they kind of renamed the game. I guess Rescue Rover didn't say much more, and Rescue Rover 2 means that it is some sort of sequel. But with the re-release name, you have Dognapped, because in this game, from what I understand, I've never played this one, so I had to read up on it a little bit, but apparently your dog is kidnapped and you need to find him. So it kind of made more sense with the new name, and the first name didn't really say me that much. So it was interesting. But yeah, considering the Commander Keen games here, we're following up with this specific game, Commander Keen, Aliens Ate My Babysitter, that is credited as his first Commander Keen game, although he did work a little bit on the other games, but they're kind of in rearranged order, even though every game was released in the same year. So the sixth game was not released first priorly, but it is shown first in this list that I've been looking into, so yeah, of course it's all games, but he did only work on the fifth and the sixth game. Considering who worked on the older ones, it is actually Tom Hall that worked a little bit on sound effects and so on, who primarily usually works with game design, etc. Super nice person. I haven't had the honor to meet him in person, but I was on a video link with him during a conference. So it was really nice to see and get a little more glimpse of that. Considering the games we're following up on Prince here, we have Wolfenstein 3D back in 1992, Duke Nukem 2 in 1993, Rise of the Triad, Dark War in 1994, Realm of Chaos in 1995, and then Duke Nukem Advance in 2002. And then when we're looking at his credit list on music that he has released on, we can see that we have a lot of his music used again in re-releases for games, and we're talking about series such as Doom, Duke Nukem, and Rise of the Triad that are like more commonly known. We also have some other like web-based games that Apogee released, etc. But overall, we have a lot of re-releases to some extent. Some are shareware or freeware, etc. So his list has just gone from like having these older games and then just having these shown again as like Doom Ultimate or Doom Mini, Duke Nukem Ultimate Editions or Redefined, etc. Also in the newer games within this series, like Doom, Duke Nukem and Rise of the Triad or Shadow Warrior, we can also see returns of some of these tracks as well. So super interesting to see, etc. But considering the latest original game that he worked on the music for, the game is named Rack and was released in 2012. So it's really nice to see so many different games about Bobby Prince. From what I understand, he used to work in law and etc. Seems like a very like a very intelligent man that seems to cling to life. That sounds so horrible. No, but it seems like he's somebody who's really utilized. He's really engaged in his interests, and it is nice to see when this happens, because we can see from time to time people that are really like passionate about their things. And In Bobby Prince, it seems like he has some background in jazz and R&B, as he has gone through some bands that he'd been in during his time, and then joined in working with video game music in the end. So this is why we can have, I guess we're having this more funky type of music style, especially for Commander Keen. Of course, we don't hear this same vibe when we're listening to Doom, Duke Nukem, or Rise of the Triad, because we're having so... I wonder how we will be slaughtering demons while listening to funk, though, but... I don't know. We might see that one day, or maybe there is still one track somewhere out there that I haven't specifically can remember or haven't heard, so I don't know. But anyway, it is time to go and head into the next track of the week. This time we're going with Pulseman, which was released for the Sega console. And for me, everybody knows, I'm a little bit skeptic for music that is available on Genesis or any Sega console, because I usually tend to hear that they're a little bit higher pitch, and it kind of frustrates me a little bit because the melodies can be so freaking good. But anyway, let's not have me rambling about this before listening to this amazing track from the game Pulseman. The track name is called Technology. We'll be right back. really enjoyed this track. Technology from the game Pulse Man. And the music here was fully composed by the Japanese Yuichi Masuda. The game was developed by the Japanese studio Game Freak and was released on the Genesis / Mega Drive, depending on where you're living, in 1994. And the game was also released on the Nintendo Wii in 2009, and this was happening on the Virtual Console. I myself bought a lot of other games for the Sega on the Virtual Console, so I never really paid attention to this game, actually. But I was really happy when I was able to test this out. I did try it, though, just to be honest with everybody. I did play this on an emulator, because this was for a research for a podcast where we were specifically going to talk a little bit more about Pulse Man. And for people that does not know a lot or maybe nothing about Pulse Man, Pulse Man is a character that was created for the Sega in order to be some sort of fusion between Sonic and Mega Man to meet up. And the game is actually really fun, utilizing the different mechanics that Pulse Man has, not just by shooting and so on. You can actually turn into a lightning and start bouncing around, etc. One thing that I did have problem with this game, and this is something I usually tend to see when it comes to platformers, it's a lot about friction and what the developers are doing with the camera. This is one of the reasons why, for example, do not like Sonic a lot. The camera in Pulse Man is really close, so the character looks really big, and all the different blocks that you jump around on or like navigate around is really big as well. So Pulse Man is jumping like 2 or 3 blocks. It doesn't feel like a lot, even though maybe they're just using a large tile set and so on, because they couldn't have or handle a lot of different tiles at once on the screen. I don't know exactly all the different specifications for Sega and so on, but of course we've seen Mega Man, the Wireless Castle Edition, so on, where we can see a lot of the older Mega Man games, and well, they work as well as a NES game, so I don't know why they choose to have such big characters and a lot of things going on the screen that kind of just blurs everything in the end. You do a lot of leaps of faith and so on. Not a fan of those. But when it comes to Pulse Man, I really adore the game. It's fun. The music is nice. But there are some tracks that I really dislike a lot. Not due to the fact that the melodies are bad, but all due and because of the sound chip that they have in the Genesis and Mega Drive. As I said before, I'm not a super fan when it comes to music on this console, but there are still some really good melodies going on within this like console. So I really like to listen to it from time to time, but I'm not a super fan of it, because it's really hard to find good music in that sense, specifically for me, at least. Of course, there are a lot of different opinions on this, and of course, if you're a listener and you love the Genesis music, then go wild. I'm super happy for you, but please share all the music that you find that you like, so I can listen to it and hopefully like it as much as you do. But when it comes to the developer here, I don't know if you guys took any note on me saying which company it was, but do you recall the game company named Game Freak? Maybe you do, because they made a whole game series called Pokemon, and I don't know if you heard about that. I don't know. No, but it's really interesting to see a little bit before Game Freak started working on the Pokemon games, because ever since they created the first Pokemon, the world has gone wild. I mean, everybody knows about Pokemon today. Not everybody might know about Game Freak, though. No, but it's so interesting that they were able to create a franchise or an IP that really captures the heart of the players and the people out there in the world. And everybody can kind of convey and get surrounding this, especially with Pokemon Go now, for example. I'm still playing it and enjoy hanging out with other friends, playing Pokemon Go on these raid days and so on. But it's just super neat and nice enjoying this. Anyway, let's go on with the composer here. So Masuda is one of those people that like to do a lot of things within development, and we can definitely see this on not just 1, 2, 3 games. He's been working on so many different projects and so many different games, but he's been credited within production, design, programming, writing, and then audio. But if we're going to focus on one thing, let's focus on the things we're kind of talking about here. We're talking about the audio. So starting out with audio, we have the NES game Mendel Palace that was released in 1989. For note, he's almost like in all projects within audio have both worked with audio and sound effects. And I would say in the majority of the games. But still, there's a lot of games here. So I'm only going to pick a handful here in the beginning. So following up from Mendel Palace, we have The Magical Totoro-kun in 1992. And, well, after this, we kind of end up in his Pokemon decade of music and working here. But he started out with Pocket Monster because that's the full name of it. Pokemon is actually standing for Pocket Monster. Pokemon Monster. For people that did not know, that's a little bit extra information. But Pocket Monster, Akai, Midori, and Ao. This is basically Pokemon Red, Green, and Blue that we see it. So Akai, Midori is actually Japanese for green. I'm a little bit unsure on Akai, but I guess that's red as well. I don't know all the Japanese word for all the colors, but Aoi is blue, at least. So that's nice. But these Pokemon, the Pocket Monster versions, was released in 1996. And this was, of course, for the Game Boy. But ever since this, he has been working on the Pokemon series, like full front on the music part. And he worked on the music part all the way to the Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu that was released for the Switch in 2018. Of course, there have been some Pokemon releases after this. He have been working on Arceus and so on, but he has not worked on the audio for those games. So Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu is the last one that he'd worked on with the music, but still working on other things such as the production design and maybe a little bit programming. I don't think he does any writing anymore, but yeah. No, but it's really interesting always when we come across these kind of composers that is working like a one-man army. But of course, we know that the Pokemon series is not a one-man army show. But sometimes we can kind of feel it because, well, it kind of is still the same game. We're just catching new Pokemons and we have a new world to explore. But yeah, I love these games, though I don't play them as much as I might. When I'm saying I love something, still I love the IP and I love, adore what they kind of mean to people. But I'm not playing each and every Pokemon game because they're very, for me, it's very repetitive. I'm not a super fan of the series to play them, but I still love and adore all these cute little monsters. So I can't say anything else than I love Pokemon. It's just super adorable and fun. But yeah, next game is going to be a little bit more, for me, nostalgic, I would say. Even though I did play Commander Keen when I was younger, this one holds a little bit more of a special like part in my heart for some reason. Could be that I watched the series for a long time, even though I'm not following it anymore. But this game, I really adore it. So let's listen to Krusty's Super Fun House, and the track name is Begin Rat Extermination. Let's begin the rat extermination. This was from the game Krusty's Super Fun House. And I'm really sad to say this, but when it comes to this game, the soundtrack and everything, we don't have any specific names for the person or people behind the audio for, well, in this case, the specific Super Nintendo version. This game was released on a lot of different consoles, PC and so on, and I think a majority of the times for the different port versions and so on, we have the same studio names behind these, and I could only literally find one name for these two studios. We have New Romantic Productions and Big Mouth Studios, first of all. And for the studio that I was able to find a name, it was only for the founder of that company, and it was for the New Romantic Productions, which was founded by the American Mark Steven Miller. And don't know if it was just a one-man army show on this, because this studio was only active for about 3 years, from I think it was 1992 to 1995. After that, Mark basically started working at Sega, and from that point, we kind of lost track of him. Not lost track of him, because I didn't continue any research on him. Of course, he continued with Sega and started working there, and working on most likely audio things for that studio. The game for now, Cressy's Super Fun House here, was developed by the British studio Autogenic Software and had releases on the Super Nintendo, the Sega Genesis or Mega Drive, NES, so Nintendo Entertainment System, and Game Gear. And this was released in 1992. The year after, we also had releases for the Game Boy, DOS, Amiga, and Sega Master System. So it's a little bit sad that we can't get more information about the composers behind these. I know David Whittaker was the sound programmer for this, but that does not necessarily mean that he created any of the tracks within this game, as composers are New Romantic and Big Mouth Studios for a majority of these games, ports, and development. But yeah, when it comes to this game, I really, for people that you know, I grew up with the Super Nintendo, and Krusty's Super Fun House was one of those games that I really adored to go and rent from time to time. I didn't play it like a freaking slave. I never completed this game either, because there are so many puzzle levels in this. But yeah, in this, you have like this full hub world where Krusty is in his own little house, I guess. That's the Super Fun House. And I don't really know specifically what's so fun about it, because originally this game was actually called Rat Trap. And it basically was a character running around killing rats. But as the game kind of was portrayed, and they were like, hey, no, let's make this an IP game on some sort of IP. And for some reason, they were able to get the Simpsons IP to make Krusty the Clown as the main character running around in his old little funhouse, and basically eliminating and exterminating all the rats that does shenanigans. And shenanigans itself is just the rats running around, and you're supposed not to kill them in any other way, or lose them, or not get them to walk where you want them, unless you direct them to this extermination machine handled by Bart Simpson. And it's like a large boxing glove that sometimes it can electrocute them, you smash them, and so on. But yeah, you're basically killing off, exterminating these rats in this game. And you will play as Krusty, and you will go around picking up blocks and trying to solve this puzzle without getting rid of the rats any other way than getting them to this extermination machine. So it's basically a large little Lemmings type of game. But instead of controlling the rats themselves, giving them any sort of job like the Lemmings, you're basically getting them around so they can get exterminated by the correct machine. And yeah, it is a hard game, to be honest. I thought it was super hard when I was playing it back in the day. I actually been thinking about picking this game up and playing it on stream or something like that, because it would be nice and fun to get back to this game and see, how hard was it actually? Were I just stupid? Now as I'm older and hopefully smarter than my younger self, will I be able to complete this game? It doesn't seem like it's a super long game, as it is limited on the amount of levels there is in the game. But of course, the complexity of the puzzles you're trying to solve within this game is the hard part. And this is where it might take a lot of time. So yeah, I'm just super interested in getting into this. The music is interesting and fun as well. So I really like and adore the music that we heard in this track, for example. Begin Wrath Extermination is also one of the first kind of when you head into a room from the hub world. This is one of the tracks you will listen to going on and on and on. All the tracks is a limited amount of tracks that are used for multiple rooms. But all of them are really, really long. As you can hear in this background, we're like looping them. So the looping is usually in like a minute or so. But for some reason, the tracks, as they took them out, they made a super long. So they're about 7 minutes long in each and every track, which is just crazy, in my opinion. But yeah, super amazing game, really lustrous with the colors and everything. A lot of yellow is used in this game. But yeah, super fun game. I really loved and adored it. Rented it multiple times and had a great time, even though I never completed the game. But yeah. Another game that is super adorable and did kind of make an impact, but I never really understood the connection of this game until I researched it a little bit more. We're going to listen to the normal main theme in the arcade version of Rainbow Islands, The Story of Bubble Bobble 2. Have it, folks, the last track of the week. This was Rainbow Islands, The Story of Bubble Bobble 2. And this was the normal main theme from Arcade. And yeah, first of all, when it comes to me, I actually only knew this game as Rainbow Islands. I never, ever have I thought that this is The Story of Bubble Bobble 2. So me, when I was thinking about platforming, first of all, I was almost this close, and I'm showing with my fingers how close it was, and you can just think about it, it's really close, to actually start picking, like, the normal platforming games that I really love and adore. But I was like, no, let's actually go with some other ones that I especially get a little bit more of a width on it. So that's why I was thinking, like, yeah, let's go with some old but gold platforming games that I really adored and loved when I was younger. Because I haven't always talked about these games to any certain extent. I usually tend to take these games that are close at heart. And just thinking about it, there's still a lot of different platforming games and, of course, a lot of other games from my younger days that I really loved and adore and absolutely play the shit out of. But yeah, Rainbow Island was one of these games. And the reason why I love this one, how I got this game was really, really weird, because when I grew up, we got this computer basically through my dad's work. In Sweden, we had this, like, subsidized for people that are working in technical areas. So basically, Swedish families were able, through work, to buy computers easier so people can get more technological at home as well. And for me, when we got this PC, there weren't much to play on it, in all honesty. The computer was mainly used as some sort of calculator and using it for programs to write and write them emails and so on. But of course, you still needed the modem and everything to set up, and it was a hassle. So for me, in the beginning, when I was younger and we got it, of course, I was interested. I see these, like, huge floppy disks in the beginning with other people that had computers at home. But we got this more modern one where you had the small floppy disks instead. And it was special. But when it comes to Rainbow Island and how I got in touch with this, it was actually through my father yet again. My father and my parents is not really gaming parents at all. They only got out of necessity, I feel, the PC. But the console, we got on Nintendo early through an auction, but we didn't play on it that much, and the games we had on it was really hard. We did go and rent some games, but I wasn't too fond of the NES back in the day. I was more interested in being outside playing with my friends, to be honest. But then we got a Super Nintendo and everything got excited, but then something happened with PC as well. There were games coming in, because from Windows 98, you have, like, the classics one. You can play the pinball with the Space Cadet and so on. And, yeah, you played those. You didn't really play any other games, really. But then, one day, my father just hands me this CD. Or if it was a father. I'm pretty sure it was a CD. And he said, like, yeah, we got some games. Maybe you can try them out. And, of course, it was one of those classics burned CDs with a lot of different games on it. Rainbow Island was on this disc, and I loved and adored this game. It was colorful, it was playful. As I remember with Rainbow Islands, it was, graphic-wise, it had this arcade, so I don't know. I'm pretty sure we were able to play different versions of this. I don't remember if it was you just clicked on a button and it kind of changed, or if it was that I needed to start different ones. But you had the one that I remember was the arcade, and one that I remember was more DOS or PC-related. But yeah, loved and adored this game. I will talk a little bit more, but first, let's dive into the composer of the last track of the week here. So, the music in Rainbow Islands, The Story of Bubble and Bubble 2, was composed by the Japanese Hisayoshi Ogura. And in this specific game, he is credited as OGR. And the game was developed by the Japanese company Taito Corporation. The game was initially released on the arcade back in 1987. So this game is actually older than me. Yay! But it was ported to a lot of different computers, such as Amiga, the Atari ST, Commodore 64, ZX Spectrum, the Amstrad CPC, and all those were released in 1990. In 1992, it was released for the NES and the TurboGrafx CD in 93. Game Boy Color got a version of this one as well. Did not know that one, so it's always interesting when I'm going through these. It was Game Boy Color in 2001, PC was released in 2004, and lastly on the Java platform devices, so like phone device and so on, called J2ME, and this was the last release of this game in 2005. No, but in this game, you're basically playing Bubble and Bubble, or Bublun and Boblun, which is known as Bub and Bob here in the West. But in this game, comparing to the first Bubble and Bubble game, they appear in their human forms, because in the first game, you have these bubble dragons that they are. What they're doing with the second game, they're actually following the true ending of the first game, which I didn't know. I know you had to play, like, all the, 99 levels within Bubble and Bubble, and you cannot die, I think. You cannot get a credit or something like that once. Because then you mess that up. Of course, you can jump in levels, but to get the true ending, you need to play all the 99 levels in one go without getting a credit. And that's when you get the true happy ending for the first game. And this is also something similar in the second game. There is a happy true ending, but you also have an ending as well. But in this game, you basically play the human form of Bublun and Boblun. You instead of playing simultaneously in the game, you play you play one at a time, basically. You're hot seating the game, so you will only play one each time, and you play these human form characters, and you basically shoot rainbows. You can get power-ups on these rainbows, so they become longer and so on. You can utilize these to jump on in order to get to, like, other heights. So instead of having these one screen, you're basically jumping from the bottom to the top. And you have water in the bottom, so islands are kind of sinking. And you need to go up in order to win and survive each and every level. And on top of that, you have all these different enemies. You can either hit them with the rainbow, or you can trap them inside. By trapping them inside the rainbows, you actually convert them into more points and so on. And this is also how you obtain diamonds with specific enemies. I don't know if there was specific criteria that you need to kill X amount, or if it was only a specific enemy that had these crystals. So it was hard getting these, but by collecting all the crystals on these islands, you will also unlock the secret islands, and by unlocking the secret islands and completing these, you will also have the true happy ending of the game. So it's a really cute game. I loved and adored it. There's a lot of reused music, as we heard in this one. It has a lot of similarities to Over the Rainbow. Somewhere over the rainbow, and so on. But you can also hear where they're mixing this up. So it's really mind-boggling that they chose to go with such a similarity to the original Over the Rainbow track, but still managed to change it, like, fully. So my mind is just going haywire listening to this track. It's like, because I'm starting to sing the lyrics in my head. And then it just twists out, and my brain just goes to mush because I'm still continue singing, but it doesn't add up with the melody that I'm hearing. So I'm always getting messed up on this one. But it's really nice, and I love and adore the music for this game. So highly recommend it to listen through more of them. You will definitely, if you have played a lot of Nintendo games, you will hear similarities to the other tracks as they make similarities and references to other games in Taito's series that they have worked on. So you have Arkanoid, for example, that I remember on top of my head. But yeah, considering the composer here, Ogura started out with making video game music back in 1985, and this was for the game The Legend of Kage for the arcade, which was also later then ported to the NES. And by selecting a handful of the games of the 46 credited games that he has, we have Arkanoid in 1986. We have The Ninja Warriors in 1988, same year as I was born, yay! Saigaya in 1989, Alien vs. Predator in 1993, Liquid Kids in 1998, and lastly the latest original game, Pitapat Beat, that was released on iPad in 2014. He does have one later release, and this one is shown as Cotton Reboot, which basically is a re-release of the Cotton. Of course, it has some upotted graphics and so on. And this one was released for the Nintendo Switch in 2021. And music-wise, we are basically reusing the music from the original Cotton game. Cotton 100%. No, but it's super interesting. I loved going through this week's tracks, and I hope you really enjoyed my talk surrounding them, but also enjoyed the picks that I did for these games. And I hope you guys were interested in either trying out one of these games or feel free to just go through and listen to the rest of the soundtracks. I highly recommend it on all of these games. With that said, it is time to close up this week's episode. So other episodes of Gameable Audio, you'll find those on our homepage, videospelsklubben.se. You can find it also on Spotify or in your closest podcast app. Feel free to follow and comment on one of our social medias, either on Facebook or on Instagram. Just search for Gameable Audio and you'll find your way there. Either commenting or just following helps a lot in getting a better reach with this podcast, because it's always nice to talk to new people about the music. It's super fun when I get to meet fans of the podcast as well, hanging out, etc. So I'm just excited to have more people to talk to, share the love for video game music. And also in the end, of course, I'm going to educate myself surrounding all the references and recommendations you guys send to me. Of course, it might end up in me talking about a specific video game series or game that you love and adore. So feel free to give some more suggestions on themes and games for me to look into. You can also support this podcast for future content and quality upgrades. I would love to get a mixer table. I'm trying to save up some money for that. But right now, we're still utilizing a lot of the money that we do have on Patreon to buy in the music, etc. So for that, think about becoming a Patreon, because in the end, when I don't need any more money for the podcast, because I have all the new mics and everything that I would like, so I can go around and interview composers eye to eye and also buy in the music for each and every episode, we will give it to new and future composers out there. They're still struggling to find their first new beat. So it's for a good cause. It's not just supporting me, it's supporting the community and the people that we love and adore in the end. So people, think about becoming a Patreon. It will help. Our current awesome backers that we do have today, though, is Daniel Onemark, Lars Schenström, Titti Schenström, Kevin Wikström, and Mike Björkholm. So, thank you all for supporting the cause and the podcast. It means a lot to me to have your guys' support. I'm doing this for free, and I still love and adore researching and making these podcast episodes, and I hope I will continue to do this for a long time. Links to where you can either find and buy the music and support the composers behind the music that we'll listen to today, you'll find those in our main post at videospelsklubben.sc. And the next episode theme we're going to talk about, this is something I've been thinking about doing for a long time as well. I feel it why later? Let's do it sooner. We're going to talk about puzzle games. I've been getting my head so much into puzzle games lately, so I would just love to go through a little bit more. For people that would like to have some sort of like estimation of what we're going to talk about, I can highly recommend that we're going to listen and talk to, because I already made this pick. We're going to listen to a track from Ghost Trick, and I highly recommend everybody to check this one out. If you find any or already have played it and have a track, feel free to share it, because I would love to hear more about the music and what you think about Ghost Trick, to talk a little bit more specifically about it next week. I'm not going to talk specifically about it per se, because it's not going to be a focused episode surrounding that game, but since it's puzzle and I love and adore, and you guys need to hear more about it if you haven't heard about it, definitely check it out. So enjoy, and then look forward to the next episode on that end. And before I miss it, because I've already missed it before previously in episodes and so on, the podcast theme music was composed by the amazing Thor Myrdal. So thank you so much for lending me your composing skills to have some really nice, unique sound to the podcast. With that said, I want to thank everybody for listening in. Thank you all for supporting and giving a thumbs up on anything that I post when it comes to these episodes. It helps. It brings me a little bit more joy to see that you guys are enjoying this as well. I can see that we are getting more and more followers on this podcast. So, very big welcome. Thank you all for finding this interesting, and I hope you've learned something new today. With that said, have a good one, and see you all guys next time.